Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today is Shabbos Daf Kuf Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's Shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur four lines from the top of Daf Kuf Ches, at the end of the line. Chayo v'oif v'chulei, the Mishnah said, Hachovil behen chayov. When we speak about Hachovil behen, inflicting a bruise or injury, a bruise to an animal, so that's an indication that they have, or that they have legal classification of having skin. As we pointed out in our previous shiur, that the translation and the legal category are not one in the same. We can speak about all creatures have skin, but the question is, does their skin lend themselves to a legal bruise? That is another issue. Coming off of that idea, though, we get into a topic concerning the writing of tefillin. On the side of our Gemara, we have the Nosei, Ksivas Tefillin al Or Oif V'dog. We're going to speak about the writing of tefillin. Tefillin have to be written on parchment which comes from the skin of animals. What about writing tefillin on the skin of birds and of fish? So our Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Kosvin Tefillin al Gabi Or Shel Oif Tar. One can write tefillin, and it will be acceptable if you write it on the skin of a kosher variety bird. Question. Amar Rav Yosef, my Komash Malan, what is Rav Huna trying to tell us by that statement? Is lay or that a bird has or has skin? And again, skin is a legal category, that it has skin which is separate from its flesh. Tanina, Hachovil Bohen Chayov. Our Mishnah says that one inflicts a bruise on birds, so he is guilty. And as we said before, that infliction of bruise on these animals is so only if they have what's legally categorized as skin. So knowing that Chovil Ben Chayav, that one is guilty for violation of Shabbos for inflicting a bruise on a bird, that is equal to its having skin. And if it has skin, so you can write tefillin on it. Omar Le Abaye. So Abaye responds to Rav Yosef and says, Tuva Komashman, Rav Huna is informing us a great deal. De'i mimas nisen, had I just had the Mishnah, Hava Amino, I would have thought, Kevon de Is Bay Nikvi Lo. Since the bird's skin, once you remove the feathers, so there are a lot of holes that are left. So because of those Nikvi, the holes, the bird skin would not be suitable for the writing of tefillin. Komash Malon Kid Amri B'Marava. So Rav Huna tells us his halacha, his ruling, in accordance with that which is said in Marava in Eretz Yisrael, Kol Nekev Shadio Iveris Olav, any pore, hole in the skin of an animal that the ink passes over, that it doesn't interfere with the construction of the letter, Eino Chai, Eino Nekev, it's not relegated, not categorized as a hole. It might physically be a hole, but the ink passes right over it, and you can form a complete letter without any break in the letter. It's okay. So this is what Rav Huna tells us, that even though it's nikvi, it has lots of holes in it, the bird skin is still acceptable for tefillin preparation. Meisvei Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira raises a question, and his question comes from a topic involving sacrifices, specifically a bird ola offering. An ola offering is a type of sacrifice where the entire animal is put on the fire, and in the case of a bird offering, the entire bird is put into the fire. Take note, before we go further, of the the Roman numerals 1 and 2 that you see to the side of the Gemara. These represent two lishonos in Rebbe Zeira. In the first lashon, Rebbe Zeira is introduced as presenting a question. Hence, it's presented as meisvei. In the Ikar D'Amri, a couple lines later, you'll notice Rebbe Zeira says af ananami tanina, whereby Rebbe Zeira presents a support. So in this question, in this first version, Rebbe Zeira presents a question. The source in the context of Ola Sa'of, the Ola bird offering, it says, Bichnafav, Lahachshir es Ha'or. That means that as opposed to an animal offering that is skinned, Hefshit, in Hebrew, Hefshit is skinning, an animal, a cow, a sheep, Ola offering would be skinned first, and then the rest of the animal is all of its limbs are placed in the fire, and the skin is given to the Kohanim. In the case of a bird Ola offering, the bird together with its skin is put into the fire. So that's what this source means. Bichnofov means teaches us lahachshir es haor, that the skin is also together with the bird, is it, the entire bird is put in the fire. The isalkadaitoch or who. If it were so that the bird has what's legally categorized as skin, hechi marbi leikra, how could the pasuk come to include it as being placed in the fire? We just got finished saying animal skins are not placed in the fire. The animals, the sheep, the goat, the cow that is offered as an ola offering is skinned prior to its placing in the fire. So this indicates what Rabbi Zeira is showing us, that the bird does not have what's legally categorized as skin. So how could you possibly write tefillin on it? Omar le Abaye. Abaye responds, or who? V'rachmona Rabbi. It's or, it is or. As Rav Huna said, you can write tefillin on it. And the Torah goes out of its way to include it in the offering. True, it's treated differently than a behemoth. A behemoth, the skin is removed first. In the case of a bird, the Torah includes it, goes out of its way to include the skin of the Ola bird offering as being part of the offering in the fire. Ikar D'Amri, as we said before, now we have the second version. Amar Rabbi Zeira af ana nami tanina. We have a source of support for Rav Huna, a Tanaic source, Bichnofov, the posit by the Olasof, the Rabos Esa'or, to include the skin as being placed in the fire. So the Torah goes out of its way to include the skin. E Amris Bishlama. If you say very well, or who, that it is categorized as skin, Hainu the Itzdruch Kroler Buya, therefore the pasuk has to go out of its way to include it. In other words, it's something that on your own you would not have thought is placed in the fire because of the behemoth precedent. So the Torah tells me, put it also in the fire. Eloi Amrislav Orhu, if you're going to say that the skin of a bird is not considered or, but rather it's part of its flesh, it's bosar, Amai Itzdruch Kroler Buye, what do you need? A special posuk to include that which is obviously put in the fire. The bosar, the flesh of the bird, is obviously part of the bird and placed in the fire. So the fact that the Torah has to go out of its way to include the or, according to this approach, that's the proof that the bird has or. Otherwise, if it were considered part of the bosar, the posuk wouldn't have to provide a special word to include it. Omar le Abaye. Here Abaye's role is reversed also from the first Lashon. Li oilom emo loch lav orhu. I could tell you that the bird skin is not legally categorized as or, v'itzdrich, and still you need the Torah to include it. Salkodai techamino kivon is be pirtzi pirtzi, mois. I might have thought that since the covering of the bird, the skin of the bird is full of holes, that's something that's moist, something that's disgusting and not fit for being put into the fire on the altar. Komash malon. So the posuk of Bichnofov tells me that put the skin in the fire as well, even though it's true it's not or, it's part of the bosar, but put it in anyway, even though it's full of these holes. The Gemara continues. Bo Minei Mor Breid Ravino Mirav Nachmon Bar Yitzchok. This is a new discussion. That's why we have a period, by the way, before the Bo Minei, because here the discussion focuses on the skin of a fish. And here it's a question. Mahu lichto tefillin al gabi or shel dag tohor? Can you write tefillin on the skin of a kosher variety fish? Omar Lei, so Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok responds, Im Yovo Elio v'yomar, if Elio, if the prophet Elio comes and says, so then we'll know what to do. The Gemara asks, My Im Yovo Elio v'yomar, what is his intent when he says that when if the prophet comes, if the prophet Elio comes and says, what is his intent in that? So here, in order to figure, to find out what his intent is, we have a double stage in analysis, and we've highlighted this with the double underline e-lema, and then elog, two lines later. So e-lema, if the purpose of Elio would be to establish e de is le or e de les le or, to establish whether a fish has skin that's considered separate from its flesh, I don't need Elio for that. Ho chazino de isle or. We see very clearly that the fish has skin that's separate from its bosar. The od ho tananen. Furthermore, we have a Tanaic source that says, atzomos hadag v'oro. We've dashed underlined the word v'oro. the bones of a fish and its or and its skin. Matzilin bo'el hameis. Means if you were to make a separation, we'll say a machitza, a curtain, out of fish bones or fish skin, it would be able to block tumas meis from going from one room to another. Now, if it were the meat of the fish, it would be considered oichlin. Oichlin is food, and food is makabel tuma. And something that itself absorbs tuma cannot block the passage of tuma from one location to another. So from the fact that this source tells us that the fish skin blocks the tuma, it shows us it's not considered part of the flesh of the fish. So it's a separate entity. And it along with the bones, is not mekabel tuma. Hence, it can block the tuma from passing from one room to another. That's what it means, matzilin bo'el hameis. So from this, it's very clear, even without the prophet Elio, I realize it has skin. So what do I need him for? Elohim yovo Elio v'yomar ipaska zuamo mine, ilo paska zuamo mine. What I need Elio to tell me is the zuamo is something that's considered disgusting. It could be translated as filth or dirt. And the issue here is that when you remove the skin from the fish and you want to prepare it for the writing of tefillin, does the disgusting element of it, is it removed, is it non-existent or not? Exactly where this element of disgustingness comes from, that's already discussed in Sforim, in commentaries, but for our purposes, we'll just leave it as a phenomenon known as Zuamo. And Elio would have to come to tell us whether the Zuamo is present in the case of the fish skin or not. If it's not present, so then it would be suitable for the writing of tefillin. We have an incident, a story that is presented now in the Gemara. And the story itself covers a number of lines of Gemara. You'll notice we have a Maisa written, call this a long marking, where we've written the word Maisa on the side of the Gemara. And that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line to show you how many lines of Gemara are addressed by this Maisa. On the side of the Gemara, there are no sour topic heading. We've written Maisa de Shmuel v'Rav, Shoyachoyu Me'ayim. This is a story involving Shmuel and his meeting up with Rav. Rav was a person who suffered from suffered from a digestive ailment. And that will come out in the course of this story. The story opens up with Shmuel and a colleague or disciple. Right from the story, it would seem it's that he's a disciple whose name was Karna, and they noticed that the color of the water, they were sitting by the water's side, by this edge of a river, and the water color changed. And there was no wind that would be responsible for, let's say, whipping up the riverbed and making the water muddy in color. And yet it changed in color, and this aroused Shmuel that something unusual is happening, and he realized that the water was changing in color and rising in its level. Maybe we could call it a tide, even though we're talking about a river, and it served to serve as a type of mechitza. It blocked their vision of a boat that was arriving, that was sailing in the horizon in their direction. This caused Shmuel to realize that a special person must be on his way, and the person was suffering from some type of digestive failure, and therefore he needed to relieve himself on the side of the boat, and out of respect and modesty, the water was serving as a type of curtain so that people couldn't see him while he was relieving himself, and this we'll see as we go in the story. Shmuel v'Karna have a Yasvi Aguda de Nahar Malka. Shmuel and Karna were seated by the Guda, the banks of the river Malka. That's the name of the river. Chazinu l'maya de Kodolu v'Akiri. They noticed that the water level was rising and it was also murky. Omar le Shmuel v'Karna. Shmuel announces to Karna, he says, Gava Rabaka Simi Marova, a great man is coming from Eretz Yisrael. There was this river connected Bovel, where they were located, with Israel. And this person, V'chayish V'me'ei, his digestive tract is ailing. The Kodolu Maya Lakbule Apikame, and the water is rising toward him, in other words, to serve as a separation between the great man on the boat and everyone else, so that when he would relieve himself at the edge of the boat and exposes himself, he wouldn't be seen. So this man, this great man, is coming. Zil tohi le akankane. This is an expression, tohi le akankane. Literally, it means to smell the barrel. That's when you are making wine and you want to know whether the wine is ready, it's fermented to the level that you desire, you would smell the barrel, smell through a hole in the barrel. That's the expression that's used here, which in our case means test him out. He's a great man. See how great he is in his learning. Rashi says, Badku im chochem hu im lav. Check him out to see whether he is a scholar or not. So, ozal ashkeche l'rav. Karna went, and he met up with he who we find out later turns out to be Rav. Rav, the great Amora, maybe the greatest of all Amoraim, who's the first generation of Amoraim, and he was on his way from Eretz Yisrael in this boat to Bovel. Omar Leh, so Karna asks, and we have a house marking. You can see this shape is featured under our Mivneh heading on the side, where we've written Shelot Mivchan. These are test questions, Shel Karna l'Rav, which Karna presents to Rav, Kishe Nishlach, after Karna was sent Litois al Kantonu, to check him out. So here we have a series of questions. Omar Leh, Minayin She'ein Kisvin Tfilin Elo Al Gabi Or Behe Motor. From where do you know that Tfilin are to be written only on the skin of kosher variety animals? Omar Leh, so Rav answers, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Leman Tie Toras Hashem Beficha, which we take to mean equals Min HaMutar Beficha, that the writing of the Tfilin should be on something that is permissible for you to eat. Hence, kosher variety. This pasuk is a pasuk that's written in the tefillin. It's one of the four parshios, one of the four passages. And just to hear the whole pasuk, it says in Shmos Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Tes, which is in what's known as Parshas Kaddish Li Kol Bechor, V'hoya lecho li'ois al yodcha. Ulazikron bein einecha, the al yodcha and bein einecha reference to the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel roish, and it goes on to say, Leman tia teras Hashem beficha, Ki biyod chazokot yocha Hashem Mitzrayim. So in this pasuk, you see a reference to beficha, in your mouth, an indication that the tefillin are written on something that you can eat. Hence, it's a kosher variety animal. The questions continue. Minayin, we continue in the Gemara, the second house marking. Minayin, ledam shehu odom. From where do we know that blood is red in color? This has legal bearing when it comes to establishing dam nida. This is the menstrual blood of a woman in order to know whether she is in a state of tuma or not, which we call a nida state. We have to know whether the emission coming forth from her is a blood emission. And in order to determine that, we determine it based on color. And we have to hear the Gemara is asking, how do I know that blood is red? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Vayu moav mineged es hamayim adumim kedam." So in this pasuk it says, "Adumim, red like blood." Hence, I understand that blood is red. So if there's a red emission coming from a woman, we will associate it with blood, and she would then be tameah. Minayin, the Gemara continues, another question that Karna presents. Minayin lemila sheva oisim mokum. From where do I know that circumcision takes place in the organ that it does, on the male organ? Nemarka, so the answer to that is, Nemarkan orloso. It says in the context of circumcision, the word orloso. V'nemar lahalon, in the case of plants, there is a law that the first 3 years of a fruit tree, one is not allowed to benefit from its fruits, and that's called orlo. So in that context, which is known as netio, a newly planted sapling, it says orloso. Ma lahalon dover she'oisipri, just like in the context of netio, we're talking about fruit trees, something that produces fruit. Afkan, so too in circumcision, dover she'oisipri, we're dealing with an organ that is associated with reproduction. The Gemara asks, if you're dealing with a word comparison, amal, and here you can see a double underline, which represents, as we've indicated on the side under our mivne heading, amal are hatsos chilufios lamokomilo. These are alternative suggestions for where circumcision might be expected to take place. So amal libo, maybe it's his heart, which would sound like some type of open heart surgery for circumcision. Dichtiv, umaltem es orlas levavachem. And you notice the word orlas appears here, the orla of one's heart. The amal, and by the way, the word orla in circumcision is understood to be foreskin. Maybe it's a reference to the pericardium. Amal ozno, maybe it's a reference to one's ear. Dichtiv, Hine arelo oznam. Here you have the word orlo in the context of ears. Ozen is an ear. So the Gemara answers why we are fixated on the actual place that we're familiar with, the male organ. Donan orloso toma, mi orloso toma. We compare where you have a complete similarity in words. So in the case of circumcision, you have the word orloso spelled out, ayin reish lamet tofov. And in the case of the saplings, you have it spelled out the same way. And toma means complete, the complete similarity. The ein donin orloso toma me orlas she'eino toma. And I'm not going to conclude what orloso is in the case of circumcision from another context where the word is not in its complete form. In other words, it's not exactly similar. At this point, Rav gets the feeling that he's being tested out. In other words, these aren't, we'll call it, innocent questions, but they're questions that are challenging him. And I would imagine that's an uncomfortable feeling. Omar Lay, my Shimcha. Rav asks, what is your name? And he answers, Karna, my name is Karna. Omar Lay. So Rav says, Yehei Ravo. Yehei Ravo means Yehi Rotzon. It should be the will. De Tepuk Le Karna Be'ene. That a Karna, which... Literally translated, mean a horn should emerge from your eyes. Rashi says on this, he understood that Karna was coming here to test him out. So he said this, Lesof, and as the story goes on, we continue in the Gemara, Lesof Aile Shmuel Lebese, Shmuel, who was a doctor, he brought Rav into his home. Uchle Namo Desiree, he his intent here, Shmuel's intent, is to cause him to become Mishulshal. Mishulshal is a loose constitution of bowel movement. And in order to loosen his bowels, he feeds him. Na'amo desairi is a barley bread. Uchle means he gave him to eat. Na'amo desairi, barley bread. The kosa d'harsana is a type of fish food. It's a fish prepared with an oil, flour type batter. The ashke shichra, and he gave him some beer. So he's now, you see him eating barley bread with this fish preparation and drinking beer. Velo achfile base akise, and Shmuel did not show Rav where the bathroom facility was, and all of this was kihechi de lishtalshel. So this would cause the digestive tract to become diuretic, and there is a certain amount of pain involved in this as well, where a person is forced to experience this we'll call it internal discomfort and not be able to relieve himself. But this was in fact the procedure to cure Rav of his ailment. Layit Rav. Rav didn't realize what was going on. He thought that Shmuel was simply oppressing him. And the Omar, and he said, Man de mitzaron, he who is causing me pain, lo luk mua le boni, he should not have children. V'chein hava, and as a result of this curse, granted it to us, it might appear to be unfounded, but we know from elsewhere that a person has to be very careful when it comes to a Torah sage and what he says, including what he curses, it will take hold. V'chein hava, and thusly it was. The Gemara continues with the topic of the Mila. Kitanoi, it's presented here as a machlokes tanoim. Minayin lemila sheva oisim mokum. From where do we know that the circumcision takes place where it does? Ne'amar kan or loso v'nemar lahalon or loso. Again, we see this word comparison, like we saw that Karna had asked and Rav answered. Ma lahalon dover shoy sepri, af kan dover shoy sepri. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. So Rabbi Yoshia's answer is the word comparison from the case of fruit saplings. Reb Nosson Omer Eino Tzorach. Reb Nosson says you don't need the word comparison, because the answer to the question of circumcision being where is it done can be answered from the pasuk itself within the context of circumcision. Harehu Omer, it says in Sefer Bereishis, in the context of Avram Avinu and the mitzvah of Milah, which Avram Avinu was charged with, it says, "V'ol zocher lo yimol es besar oloso." And in this pasuk, you see a reference to the male, orel zocher, mokom shenikar bo shenikar bein zachus lenakvus. The circumcision takes place in that organ where you can recognize the difference between a male and a female. And certainly, when you're dealing with an infant, the only way to recognize the difference between make a gender recognition or gender takes place at that particular organ. Hence, we know from this pasuk Vorel Zohar Lo Yimol Es Besar Loso that Mila, that circumcision, takes place where the gender is recognizable. We continue now with the general topic. We revert back, we'll say, to the topic of the writing of tefillin, on what materials you can do that. Tanu Rabbanan, Kosvim tefillin al gabi or behemot tohora. Actually, before we go further in the Gemara, we should just note our topic heading is Hachonas tefillin dafka mimin behemot tohora. We use the term in our introduction, Hachonas, the preparation of tefillin, because in this section of Gemara we're going to go beyond the issue of just the writing, because there are other aspects of the tefillin as well that includes the sewing together of the boxes holding the tefillin, and each capsule, each parsha of the tefillin was also wrapped around or tied with a hair from an animal. So our source says, Kosvim tefillin al gabi or behemot Torah, al gabi or chayot Torah. One writes tefillin on the skin of domesticated kosher variety animals as well as wild kosher variety animals, the al gabi or nevelus atrefus shelahen, and on the skins of nevela or trefa forms of kosher variety animals. A nevela is an animal that died, that didn't receive a proper slaughtering, and a trefa is an animal that has a type of organ or limb defect that renders it a trefa, forbidden to be eaten. Nevela and trefa are both examples of animals that are forbidden to be eaten. However, the Torah tells us, this source tells us that even though you can't eat the animal, this specific animal, nevertheless, it's an avela or trefa of a kosher variety animal. So very simply, a kosher variety animal that died without being slaughtered, or it had a hole in a vital organ and making it a trefa. What else? The nechrochos besairon, passages of the tefillin are tied around with their hair, v'nitporos begidon, and sinews of the animal or the veins of an animal are used to sew shut the tefillin boxes. V'halocho l'moshe mi-Sinai, and it's an oral tradition back to Sinai, shatfillin nechrochos besairon v'nitporos begidon, and that the tefillin are tied together and sewn together with these materials. Aval ein koisvin lo al gabi or behemot tamea. But you do not write the tefillin on the skins of unkosher variety animals. That's lo al gabi or behemot tamea, lo al gabi or chayot tamea, or undomesticated, wild, unkosher variety animals. The eino tzorach lomar al gabi or nevela utrefa. It goes without saying, unkosher variety animals that dropped dead or were trefas. The ain nichrochen besiron vein it poros begidon, and likewise they're not wrapped around with the hairs nor the veins of those animals. The zusha elo shal baitusi echod es Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi. Baitusi is a type of a member of a sect of Jews that did not accept the oral tradition. So a baitusi asked Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi, Minayin she'en kosvin tefillin al or behemot tamei. From where do you know that tefillin cannot be written on the skin of unkosher variety animals? So Rabbi Yeshua answers, Dichtiv leman tia toras Hashem beficha. That's the pasuk we saw cited earlier. Midavar hamuta beficha, from something that one is allowed to eat, excluding unkosher variety animals. Elo me'ata. Well, if that be the case, and this baitusi was learned. And he said, well, if that be the case, al gabi or nevelos utrefos al yichtevu. So you should not be allowed to write on the nevelo or trefa form of kosher variety animals. And yet we saw before that one is allowed to do that. Amarle, Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi answers, Emshol chmoshol, I'll give you an analogy. Lemaha dover dome, what is this issue comparable to? Lishnei b'nei odom, shenishaivu harigo lemalchus. Imagine two people that were sentenced to death by the government. Echad horgo imelach, echad horgo ispak litor. The one of them was killed by the king, and the other one was killed by the king's executioner. In other words, an officer, but not the king himself. Eze mehen meshubach, which of these two victims, or called the condemned ones, which of these two would you say is a more significant individual? Heve Omer Zeh Shehargo Melch. You would, of course, say the one that was executed by the king himself. Elo Me'ata. Well, if he's so important, then Yochlu. So then, let it be able to be eaten. And we should point out that an animal that dies naturally, you know, it's a nevela, it's just dropped dead, or it's a trefa. This is something that was killed by the Almighty. In other words, it was through natural causes. So he asks, well, if it's so important, then you should be able to eat them. Omar lei. So Rabbi Shua answers, Ha Torah omra lo yisochlu kol nevela. The Torah says you can't eat it. The Adamus Yochlu, and you're suggesting contrary to the Torah that they should be eaten. Amale, so the Baitusi answers, Kalus. Kalus is an expression of Meshubach, that you're giving a good answer. In other words, he appreciated this answer, that even though it's something that can't be eaten, but the fact that it died, natural causes, shows that it is of significance, enabling them, the nevela trefa of a kosher riot animal, to be suitable for the writing of tefillin. But as far as eating is concerned, the Torah says you can't eat their flesh. Ein oisin hilmi b'shabbos. The Mishnah says one cannot prepare hilmi. Rashi gives a French word for that. In the course of the Gemara, we will see that this has to do with salt water. And hence, under our topic heading on the side, we've written mei melach, salt water. So the Mishnah says one is not allowed to prepare hilmi on Shabbos. Avol oisehu es mei hamelach. And this is where the things appear a little difficult to understand. And the Gemara will ask this question. Because here the Mishnah says you can make salt water, v'toivel ben pito, and dip your bread in it, v'nosein l'socha tafshil, and put it in a food. Amar Rabbi Yossi asks, v'halo hu hilmi bein meruba ubein muat. Whatever it is, whether you make a lot or a little, it's the same thing. meaning, if you forbid making a large quantity, so you'll have to forbid making a small quantity. And if making a small quantity is allowed, then you should be allowed to make a large quantity. The Gemara will point out that Rabbi Yossi is coming to be stringent. So, the Mishnah is a bit vague as up till this point. Let the Gemara explain further. The Gemara continues, V'eluhein mei melach hamutaren. The following is the allowed mei melach. Nosein shemen lichatchilo l'soch hamayim o l'soch hamelach. The Mishnah says that in order to prepare salt water in an acceptable fashion, one is to make sure that you avoid initial mixing of water and salt. Therefore, if you mix the salt with oil first, that would be okay. That's what he says. No sein shemen lichatchila. If you mix the salt with the oil, or you pour the oil into the water first and then the salt, that would be okay. The Gemara asks, "My ko'omar," and Rashi explains, "My hilmi umay mei melach." The Gemara is asking, "What are these things?" Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Hochi Komar. So Shmuel explains, thusly we are to understand the Mishnah, and with this we'll understand what Hilmi is. Ein Oisin Mei Melach Merubin. Hilmi, and this you might have already understood from Rav Yossi in the Mishnah, Hilmi is a reference to a large amount of salt water. So one is not allowed to prepare that on Shabbos. But one is allowed to prepare a small amount of it. As we saw in the Mishnah, it's an amount that you would use for dipping your bread or mixing with your food. The Gemara continues. Ibai Alaho. Rabbi Yossi, le'asor o lahatir. Rabbi Yossi, as he appears in the Mishnah, is he coming to be lenient or is he coming to be strict? We already explained, based on Rashi, what Rabbi Yossi's position was, but when you read the Mishnah itself, it's not clear. So the Gemara is asking, what is his position? And in order to answer this, you'll notice we have a double underline that appears. Rabbi Yehuda, he says, lahatir. And the next opinion, Rabba says, le'asor. So you have a machlokis amoroi between Rav Yehuda and Rabba as to what Rav Yossi's role is. Omar Rav Yehuda, lahatir. Rav Yossi is coming to allow the preparation of a large amount of mei melach, of salt water. How do I know that? Midolo kotoni, from the fact that the Mishnah doesn't say outright, Rav Yossi oser, that Rav Yossi forbids. Omar le Rabba. Rabba responds and says, Ha midikotoni seifa, from the fact that the end of the Mishnah, which is the we'll say it's the Tanakama speaking. He says V'elu hein mei melach hamutorin, and these are the allowed mei melach. So michlal de Reb Yossi le'esor, it must be that Reb Yossi is coming to forbid, meaning to forbid even a small quantity. Elo oma rabo le'esor. So Rabo concludes that Reb Yossi is here to prohibit even making a small quantity. The Rashi, we should have maybe mentioned this earlier, but Rashi on the second line from the top says that the problem in salt water is that salt is a material, is an ingredient in the tanning process. So Rashi says, "Mipnei shehu kema'abed is misakin es ha'oichel hanosun l'sochu kedei sheyiskayim." It creates the impression that the food that one is going to put into the salt water is being placed in the salt water for preservation purposes. Just like tanning makes the skin of animals last a long time, that's the tanning process. So too, it is associated here with the preservation of food, and that would be something that's forbidden. The Gemara continues with other opinions that forbid, that explain Reb Yossi as being a stringent opinion. V'chein omar Reb Yochanan le'esor. Reb Yochanan also says that Reb Yossi's role is to prohibit, meaning prohibit even making a small amount of salt water on Shabbos. Tanya nami hachin. We have a Tanaic source that bears this out. Ein oisin mei melach merubin. One is not allowed to make a large amount of salt water. Loseis l'soich akvoshim shebesoch gistera. That the mei melach that's forbidden, this large quantity, is something that one would pour over. Kvoshim are vegetables or food items that you want to pickle, that you want to preserve. And the preservation usually took place in a clay type shard, which is called a gistera. It's a broken clay vessel, which isn't useful for other things, so they would use it for pickling. Aval oise, the source goes on, aval oise hu mei melach mu'otin, person is allowed to prepare a small quantity of salt water on Shabbos, the oichel bohen pito, and use it as a dip with his bread, the noisein l'toch hatavshil, or for adding to other dishes. Amar Reb Yossi, v'chi mipnei shehalolu merubin v'alolu mu'otin, just because one is a large quantity and this is and these are a small quantity, halolu asur v'halolu mutarin, we should make a distinction, saying that the large is forbidden and the small quantity is allowed. You know what people are going to say? Yomru, people will say, malacha meruba asura, malacha muetis muteris, that a large amount of malacha is forbidden, but a small amount is okay, which obviously is erroneous. Elo elu v'elu asurin hein. And here we've dashed, underlined this, because this is really what we're focusing on, that Reb Yossi concludes that even the small amount is forbidden. V'elu hein mei melacha mutarin, the Tanakama that says that you are allowed to make a small quantity. How do you prepare it? No saying shemen u'melach, o shemen u'mayim. Mix the oil with the salt, or the oil with the water. And then add the salt. So all you must avoid is an initial mixing of the salt with the water. The point being that when the oil is present first in this preparation, where the oil is there when the salt is placed in, the oil limits the strength of the salt from acting as a preservative. It reduces its strength, and that's why this is the allowed method. As we go on in the Gemara, you see in parentheses a series of three words, azin, tznon, v'esrog, simen. This is a key words, we'll say, in order to remember what follows in the Gemara. On the side of our Gemara, because you notice triangles that appear, we've noted Shalosh Brises Shehevi Reb Yehuda Bar Chaviva, three Tanaic sources that Reb Yehuda Bar Chaviva quotes. The first two deal with the issue of salt and salt water in the context of Shabbos. The third is something else. The third source that he quotes will be connected to that was mentioned in the second, as we will see. The Gemara, Tani Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva, Ein oisin mei melach azin. One is not allowed to make strong mei melach. My mei melach azin, what do you mean by that? Rab Rav Yosef bar Abba, the Amrit Shvat, both Rab and Rav Yosef say, Kol shabetzot sofo behen. If it's such that an egg would float in it because of its high salt concentration, that's an example of something that's not allowed to be made on Shabbos. The kama, what is the ratio of water to salt in this case? Omar Abaye. Abaye answers, trei tilsi milcha, two parts, two-thirds or two parts salt, v'tilsa maya, and one-third water. Lamai avdile, why would one, what would one make this for during the weekdays? Omar Rabbi Avo, lemuriasa, this is for a murias, that's a food preparation, involving fish, very likely a fish entrail mixture where one would mix this fish entrails with salt and type of a food item. Tani Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva, ein molchin tznon ubeitza b'Shabbos. One is not allowed to salt. And Rashi adds here a few lines up in the Rashi, ein molchin tznon ubeitza. Three or four pieces together of tznon. Tznon is a type of vegetation. Sometimes it's in modern Hebrew it's translated as a radish, and a beitza is an egg. So one is not to prepare three or four pieces together. Shamelech ma'abdon, the salt literally tans them, but it firms them. Vinas and kashim, they become hard. Vahave tikkun, and that's considered a tikkun, a constructive activity, a preparatory or constructive activity that one is not to do on Shabbos. The Gemara continues. Omar Rav Nachman, meresh hava malachno puglo. At first, I used to salt. Puglo is tznon on Shabbos. Amino, I figured afsudi komafsidno lei, that by salting it, I'm actually ruining it. It's not a constructive preparatory activity. It's not a tikkun, but it's rather a form of ruination, and hence it would not be wouldn't be problematic on Shabbos. Yomar Shmuel, Shmuel says pugla churfi mali, a sharp, and it was a non-salted, a raw. Pugla, snown, as we said before, might be a radish. That is mali, is beneficial. So by salting it, I'm reducing its effectiveness, and hence I'm not improving it. I'm not making an improvement on it, and therefore I'm not. It shouldn't be forbidden on Shabbos. What we want to avoid on Shabbos is activities that would appear to be preserving or improving in nature. However, came the shamano leha dechi asa ula v'yomar. But when I heard, says Rav Nachman, that which ula came and said, b'marava malchi kishri kishri, that in Eretz Yisrael they would salt piles and piles of these of the pugla mimlach lo malachno. I realize if they're doing that in large quantities in Eretz Yisrael, so it must be a good thing. So I avoided doing that. Mimlech lo malachno tevuli vadai mat bilna. But I would salt one or two at a time for eating, for immediate eating purposes. So when when Shmuel heard that they would in Eretz Yisrael they would salt large quantities of it, I realized that should not be done on Shabbos. But to flavor them with one or two pieces at a time for immediate eating, that remains allowed. Tani Rav Yehuda bar Chaviva, esrog tznon ubeitza. These three food items, an esrog that most of us are familiar with from Sukkos. The esrog is taken together with the lulav, so in English it's translated as a citron. Tznon, we suggested before, some people translate that as a radish, and a beitza, an egg. Ilmoli kliposan achitzona enon yoitzin mibnei me'ayim le'olam. If not for their outer peel, they wouldn't leave one's innards. They would be indigestible, maybe. And in the case of the egg, when we speak about the klipa chitzona, we're referring to the white of the egg, the chelbon or the albumin, and it wraps around the inner part of the egg, the yolk. So these items, because they have an outer covering that enables them to be digestible. Ki also Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came, he said, Me oilom lo tova gavra biyama destom. A person never drowned in the Sodom Sea. Very likely a reference to what we today call the Dead Sea. Omar Rav Yosef, hafucha stom vafucha mila. Rav Yosef objects to what Rav Dimi said, and he uses a sort of like a play on the words. Stom, as you know from the story in the Chumash, was overturned. In the story involving Lot escaping Stom, the Stom was described as being overturned. And what Rav Yosef is saying, that which Rav Dimi is saying regarding the Yama of the Stom, is simply inaccurate. And what's inaccurate? Because of the way Rav Dimi presented it. He said that a person never drowned, leaving room to think that other things could drown there, could sink. Gavra hu dolotova kshura tova. Is Rav Dimi saying that, well, a man never drowned, but a wooden beam would sink there? No, obviously no. So that Rav Yosef objects to the way Rav Dimi presents his point. Omar le Abaye. Abaye defends Rav Dimi and says, Lo mibaya komar. That which Rav Dimi was saying was in the lo mibaya fashion. And we'll explain that as we go on. Lo mibaya. I don't have to tell you, kshura, that a beam didn't sink. That's obvious. Rav Dimi doesn't have to tell me the obvious. A wooden beam doesn't sink in any water. Wooden beams float on water surfaces. But a person does drown in all other bodies of water. What Rav Dimi was telling me, that in the Stone Sea, in the Dead Sea, even a person would not drown. Lamai nafka mina. Rashi tells us, we have a little star in the Rashi commentary, a number of lines down, so you can see this immediately. Let's read the Rashi. That which Rav Dimi told us regarding the person, that a person doesn't drown there, nafka lon mina ha kivon demlichi tuva masu v'osar lememats ulemiftach. It has bearing on the fact that the water of the Dead Sea has a healing capacity. In other words, the Dead Sea water is different than all other waters, and as a result of that, we conclude that it must be different in the sense that it has a healing capacity, and as such, that has ramifications for Shabbos, because on Shabbos there is a rabbinic ruling not to engage in medical procedures. Even if the actual medical procedure doesn't involve a malacha per se, but it is of a healing capacity, we know rabbinically it is to be avoided, and the basis of that is it's a gzera, so people should not come to prepare medicines on Shabbos. And the preparation of medicines involves often the grinding down of roots and leaves and other herbal items, herbal ingredients, and grinding is something that's also on Shabbos. It's an iser known as tchina. The issue of the prohibition of grinding. So as a result of that prohibition of not coming to grind, there's a general ban on medicinal or medical procedures on Shabbos. So the Gemara now continues. The Gemara says, Lamai nafgamina, of what significance is this point of Rav Dimi that no one ever drowned in the Yom of the Stone? The nafgamina, the practical legal applications are ki ha de Ravin. It's like the story involving Ravin, who was following Rabbi Yirmiyah on the road, Aguda the Yama Distom, on the shore of the Dead Sea. Omar le mahu lemimshi mehani maya b'shabbos. So Ravin asks Rabbi Yirmiyah, can one mimshi is to wash himself with these waters, with the Dead Sea waters on Shabbos? Omar le shapir dami. If you want to wash yourself with these waters on Shabbos, it would be okay. You can see with our markings, the double underline highlights the questions that that Ravin poses to Rabbi Yirmiyah. He asks another question: Ma'u lememats ulemiftach? This is a situation where one meimas is to close one's eyes tightly and miftach is to open one's eyes. So can one do this, closing and opening of one's eyes in these waters? Omar le zu lo shomati. So Rav Yirmiya answers, this question I didn't hear an answer to. Kayotze bo shomati. But something similar to this I did hear. The Omar Rabbi Zera. And before we go on, though, in the Gemara, let's just glance at the Rashi. Kayotze bo shomati. Rashi says, Dehecha demucha milsa derufu ovid, where something is clear that your behavior is for medicinal, for healing purposes, osir, it would be forbidden. Umeimatsu miftach nami, a person who in the salt waters of the Dead Sea would close and open his eyes, that's mucha milsa. It's obvious that he's doing it for some type of medicinal concern. We go back into the Gemara. So Rav Yirmiyah is telling Ravin, as far as your specific question, I didn't hear an answer to, but something similar I heard from Rabbi Zera. And as the Gemara goes on, Rabbi Zera tells us, Zimnin omar le mishmei de Rav Matana, v'zimnin omar le mishmei de Mar Ukva. On occasions, Rabbi Zera would report the following in the name of Rav Matana, and sometimes in the name of Mar Ukva, v'travayu mishmei de Avua de Shmuel v'Levi. And both of the things that I heard from him, in other words, Rabbi Zera reports things, two points, sometimes in the name of Rav Matana, sometimes in the name of Mar Ukva, these two points were said in the names of Avuah de Shmuel and Levi. As we'll see later in the Gemara, Avuah de Shmuel said one thing and Levi said something else. Well, what is the information? So, Chad Omar, you can see we have some markings. We have this diamond marking to highlight the expressions Yayin and Rok Tofel. These markings will be helpful as the Gemara continues. So Chad Omar, Yayin Besoch Ho'ayin Osir, placing wine, of course, on Shabbos directly into one's eye is forbidden. That would be, why would someone put wine in one's eye? Obviously, it's for some type of medicinal purpose. So that's forbidden. Al gav ho'ayin mutter, but above one's eye or on top of one's eye, that would be allowed. Because people say he's using it for washing purposes. V'chad Omar, another one says, we have Avuah de Shmuel and Levi in this as sources of information. So the other one says, roik tofel, roik tofel is, roik is saliva, tofel is saliva from a person before, as after he awakens, before he has eaten anything. That's rok tofel. Afilu al gav ho'ayin osir. Even above one's eye would be forbidden. No one would put saliva on one's eye, which otherwise is disgusting, unless he has some type of medicinal purpose. Of course, we're talking, when we say it's forbidden, we're saying it's forbidden to do on Shabbos based on the prohibition of medical or medicinal procedures on Shabbos. So we have two points here. Both are highlighted with the diamonds. What the Gemara wants to know now is who said what. Tistayim, let us conclude, and we should point out that this section of Gemara will last a couple of lines. There's a question, in other words, a suggestion, and then an attempt to reject it. In the course of the Gemara, though, we're going to be highlighting with a house marking Shmuel, and the markings, as often is the case, are here for to help keep things straight. When you're dealing with a sugi with a number of variables in it, one can often lose sight of what is being discussed and related to what, hence we're going to try to help a little bit with these markings. So we want to conclude that Avuah de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, is the one who de Omar, Yayin Besoch Ho'ayin Osir, Al Gav Hayayin Ho'ayin Mutter. In other words, that we want to associate Avuah de Shmuel, whose name you saw underlined just the line before, that he is associated with Halacha number one, the wine-related point. Now, why do I want to conclude that Avuah de Shmuel, as opposed to Levi, is the author of Halacha number one? Midomar Shmuel, from the fact that Shmuel, who was the son of Avuah de Shmuel, the Shmuel says, Shira Odom Pito B'Yayin. We're talking about a Shabbos we'll call a Shabbos trick, if you will. A person can soak his bread in water, in wine, the nosno al gav ho'ayin b'Shabbos, and place it, the soaked bread with the wine, above his eye. Why is he doing this? He's doing this to enjoy the medicinal value of the wine. So this idea of having the wine above one's eye, where did Shmuel get this from? The Shmuelay Miman, who did he hear this from? Lav de Shmuelay Meavua, is it not so that he heard it from his father? So at this point, if Shmuel is talking about a procedure of wine above one's eye, you can notice how we've used the markings, the different underlinings that we have. We underline Yayin and a dot underline under Al-Gav. So you can compare this to that which we had above in Halacha number 1. So where did Shmuel get this information from? He got it from his father. So I would know to associate Halacha number 1 with Avua de Shmuel. The Gemara asks, Ulitamech, according to you are trying to bring proof from statements made by Shmuel. Hodamar Shmuel, well, Shmuel also said something else. He also addressed the issue of the saliva. Rok tofel afilu agabi ha'o'ayin osir. Shmuel himself said that the undiluted or the pure saliva above one's eye is osir on Shabbos. De Shmuel le miman, who did he hear that from? If you're going to tell me he heard that one also from his father, from Avua de Shmuel, so then notice our diamonds before, the Yayin Halacha and the Rok Tof Halacha would be associated with Avua de Shmuel. Elo Levi velo Chada Omar. So are you going to then conclude that Levi said nothing, that Levi is not the author of any of these? But we saw before Rabbi Zera telling us that he heard these two halachas in the names of Avua de Shmuel and Levi. Elo Chada Shmia Le Me Avua. One of them, Shmuel, heard from his father. V'chado Shmuel le'me Levi, and the other one, Shmuel, heard from Levi. V'lo yad inon hey me'avua hey me'levi, and we don't know. It's not clear to us. Certainly, it's not clear from Shmuel who had said what. As we go on in the Gemara, a new marking appears. You can see a bow tie, and we've noted on the side under the Mivneh heading, Memros Shel Mor Ukva. Now, if you scan ahead, if you have Daf Kuf Tes available, you'll notice that most of these are with Mar Ukva quoting Shmuel. As the markings continue, we'll see one of them with Mar Ukva without his quoting Shmuel. So the bow tie is basically to highlight Mar Ukva. In most of the cases, though, Mar Ukva is quoting Shmuel. We should also point out that, as you can see, we've touched on the issue of medicinal procedures, and the Gemara in the next number of Dapim will touch upon issues of medicinal procedures quite extensively for the next number of Dapim. So, Omar Mar Ukva, Omar Shmuel, Shore Adam Kilorin Me'erev Shabbos. One can soak Kilorin. Rashi gives you a French word for this, so we'll just have to refer to it as a medicinal substance. One can soak the Kilorin from Erev Shabbos, V'nosein Algav Einov B'Shabbos V'Eino Choshesh, and then place it above his eyes on Shabbos, and he doesn't have to worry. The Rashi elaborates on this on the second line under the Gemara, V'nosin al-gab emov. So dili didei, for the person himself, kevon de'atzruchu l'shros erev Shabbos, since we insisted on his preparing it on Friday, meaning before Shabbos, iko hekera, it will be obvious to him, v'leko l'migzar, and there's no reason to ban it based on the fear of coming to grind medicines on Shabbos. So since we're forcing him, we're insisting on his preparing it from Friday, that's sufficient for his not coming to grind medicines on Shabbos, and therefore he'll be allowed to use it on Shabbos. Uman de Chazinu, and as far as the public who sees him placing this over his eye on Shabbos, Savar derechitza ba'almahu dekosavar shuhu yayin. People won't come to think that you can prepare medicines on Shabbos because they'll think that he's just using it to wash himself, thinking that it is wine. Continuing in the Gemara, bar livoi havekoi kamei de mar ukva. Bar livoi was in the presence of mar ukva, chazie, dava mayet su posach, and he saw him opening and closing his eyes. Omale kule hai vadai lo shor amar Shmuel, but that far Shmuel would not allow. In other words, we just saw Shmuel allowing the preparation of the kilorin and placing it above one's eye on Shabbos, but to open and close one's eyes, that it would not be allowed. That's too obviously a medicinal procedure. We just saw before in the Rashi that with the kilorin above one's eye, people would say, oh, he's just washing himself off. But opening and closing one's eyes, likely in this context, in the kilorin itself, that would be too obviously medicinal. Sholach le Rabbi Yanai lemar ukva. Rabbi Yanai sent to mar ukva. Lishtor lon mor mehanoch kilurin demar Shmuel. Send to us some of the kilurin of that Shmuel spoke about. Sholach le. So he sends to him. That's mar ukva sends to Rabbi Yanai as follows. Shduri Mishadar no loch, I'll send you a sample of it. The lo tema, so that you shouldn't think tsar ayin ana, that I'm some type of miserly individual. However, Elohochi Omar Shmuel, but really Shmuel said as follows. Toivo tipas tsonen shachris. Urechitzis yodayim vraglayim v'chamen arvis. Mikol kilorin sheba olam. If you're interested in healthful living, Shmuel himself suggests that better is a drop of cold water in the morning, put a drop of cold water in your eyes in the morning, and washing your feet, your hands and legs in warm water in the evening. That's better than all the kilorin in the world. In other words, once again, for healthful living, that's what Shmuel really suggests. But I'll send you requested some kilorin anyway. I'll send you a sample just so you don't think that I'm miserly. Tanyo nami hochim. We have a Tanaic source that supports this. Omer Rabbi Muna mishum Rabbi Yehuda. Toivo tipos tzonein. That's Rabbi Muna says in the name of Yehuda that better is a drop of cold water in your eyes, shachris, in the morning, uchitzas yidayim raglayim arvis, and the washing of one's hands and feet, bechamin, in abarvis, mikol kilorin sheba olam, than all the other kilorin potion that is in the world. Hu hoya omer, Rabbi Muna said, yad la'ayin tiktas, and we're going to see a series of points where the different limbs are tiktzatz, means they should be, they deserved, or it would be better for them to be cut off than doing any of the following. So Rabbi Muna says, yad la'ayin tiktzatz, an unwashed hand in the morning, when one wakes up in the morning, and before he washes his hands, he puts his hands in his eyes, it would be better for him to have his hand cut off than put his hand in his eye. And the reason for that is that there is an evil spirit, a ruach ra, that's on one's hands that could cause blindness, and that ruach ra remains until one washes his hands. So, and that is the case in all of the comments that he will make, according to Rashi. So, yad lion, once again, hand on eye, into eye, before washing in the morning, tiksas, it'd be better for it to be cut off. Yad lechoitem tiksas. Same thing with regard to a hand in one's nostrils. Yad lepet tiksas, and hand in one's mouth. Yad leoizen, hand in one's ear. Yad lechasuda. Chasuda is the incision made by bloodletting. So, an unwashed hand being touching the cut made for bloodletting, also tiktzatz, should be better for it to be cut off. Yad la'amo tiktzatz, the amo is the male organ, and that one should not touch that. Now Tosfos on this comments that this might be a different point than than that which has been mentioned till now, but we're just going to stay with Rashi in the meantime. Yad lepitabas tiksas. Pitabas is the anal orifice that also should not be touched before one washes his hands. Yad legigis, we're at the top of kuf tes amud aleph. Yad legigis tiksas. Gigis is a barrel in which a beer is prepared. So one should not touch the beer in before having washed his hands. Yad misama, yad machreshes, yad male polyphus. The unwashed hand is capable of misama, of causing blindness. It's capable of causing deafness. That's machreshes. And yad male polyphus. Polyphus is, Rashi says, is reach achoitem vape. It's bad, foul. Foul odor coming from one's nose or from one's mouth. And by the way, we made a slight error before. The issue of the hand touching the amo, the male organ, we said in the name of Tosfos that it might be a different topic. It's Rashi here that says that on the third line from the top. Rashi adds v'li nireh diyad lamo lav linyan shachris nokat lo. It's not really an issue of washing in the morning, but it's olam mishum demevi that they carry, because touching one's male organ can bring on a release of semen, and that is something that is not related to the washing of the hand in the morning. That's something that's forbidden at all times. We continue in the Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Nosson Omer, Bas Chorinhi. The name of the Ruach Ra that we mentioned before, that rests on one's hands before washing, is name. The name of that is called Bas Chorin. Umakpedes ach yirchutz yodov shlosh pomim. And it makpedes would mean that it could cause trouble, this evil spirit. It's mind, literally, it's mindful until washing of one's hands three times, where one pours water over his hands three times in the morning over each hand. Until that's done, so this Ruach Ra will be mindful and cause problems. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Puch Mavir Bas Melech. Puch is a type of substance. Rashi doesn't explain what it is, so apparently it's a known substance. So it can remove bas melech. Rashi says, puch im nosno be'enov, if one places it in his eyes, it can remove the bas melech. And bas melech is some type of spiritual concern. And what else? Posek es hadimo, it will cause the stoppage of excessive tearing. Umarbe seir bafapayim, and increase the hairs over one's eyes. Tanyo nami hochi, a Tanaic source that supports this, Rabbi Yossi Omer, puch mavir bas melech, that it's, Rashi also explains that if the bas melech caused eye injury, so this puch will heal it. Uposek es hadima umarbe seir bafapayim. As you can see with our markings, there are more statements of Mar Ukfa in the name of Shmuel that follow, but in the context of our Daf Yomi Shiur, with this we conclude our Shiur for today.